I say it with love that we don't want to keep our brains activated with things that are just like going to elevate imaginary fear, are going to potentially bring us into like a fight or a flight kind of a mode. So there's that like caution to be exercised, because everything around us is literally an input to our senses.
Welcome to the Phase 4 podcast, inspired by Vishen Lakhiani and Ajit Nawalkar, co-founders of EverCoach, a division of Vine Valley. In this podcast, we speak to coaches and creatives about where they were, where they are, and where they are going. This is the intersection of what we focus on expands, and your story is your superpower. All right. My guest today is Dr. Sri. She's empowering her clients through natural mind, body, and soul, integrative holistic health, and healing. And today she's going to come on and talk to us about that. And so, Dr. Sri, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, definitely grateful. And I usually kind of begin with maybe just tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you ended up in this space.
Sure. So I have been in the health space for more than 15 years at this point. And my interest in health very broadly goes back to when I was a teenager. So I was always interested in health. And so I've spent many, many years working across hospitals, healthcare research centers, and nonprofit organizations. And then I've completed an award-winning PhD in health social work from Rutgers University, New Jersey. And there's a lot of background in my interest in health. And I worked with people living with HIV and in the reproductive health space, and a lot of work in the mental and emotional health space. So there was all of this going on in my life. And then I had a health crisis of my own, which was very, it was unexpected. It was sudden. It was a death-like experience. I could have not been here today, but like I survived, I lived. And that shifted something in me. Like it shifted about how I think about health a little bit. It not just shifted, but expanded how I think about health. And Ayurveda was always in my background, because it's a traditional form of healing. It's an art of longevity and the science of longevity. And it was always in the background, but I wasn't exactly focusing on it the way I probably should have. But that health crisis actually opened my eyes up to looking at it more in depth, because I wanted to like find ways of empowering myself and healing myself. And then I, of course, like got certified in Ayurveda and everything. But it's such a natural way of thinking about health. And especially when somebody goes through a health crisis, that most of my clients like haven't had, thankfully, not even been close to the kind of experience I have. But when you go through something like that, it really forces you to think about like how much and to what extent can you consume modern medicine. And so I really wanted to like find ways to activate the natural inner pharmacy of my own body, instead of like overly relying on the external health system, which I had to for a certain amount of time. But I also wanted to like find ways of like doing health on a daily basis to like find personal empowerment. Like I just didn't want to be like embeshed with the hospital system forever. So like, and I think thinking the way Ayurveda does, it also expanded me just to the power of my own body, like just being able to think about that, you know, it's, we're not really so dependent. We don't have to be dependent on external things all the time, even though there is a place for that, certainly. But we have so much that we can do just by ourselves. Like nature has a lot of resources for us to use. And so like now with Ayurveda, there's a whole set of things that we do. Like there's internal therapies and there's external therapies. And Ayurveda is very big on breath work, on yoga, which is basically a branch of Ayurveda. And there's herbal medicines, and there is oiling. The oil using Abhyanga or doing oil massages is a very big component in Ayurveda. There's like cleansing the body, the whole idea of cleansing the body and then rejuvenating the body. And that really spoke to me because I had never thought about like cleansing the body. And some of the cleansing the body is automatically doing all the time, right? Like we're always cleansing. But just because of the environment that we live in today, we have a much bigger toxic load on ourselves than we can possibly be aware of. So yeah, like it's been a long journey, but I think these are the kind of pieces. And then what I currently do, like my fertility and pregnancy prep and the mental and emotional health work, that's coming both from a personal space and also from all the previous work that I have done before.
Yeah, I love it. So you're like a triple threat, right? Because you have the doctors and you have so all the Western medicine, and you're taking Eastern medicine and health, and you actually experienced it. So you went through it. So it's not just reading it in a book. You can empathize. And I know what you're saying. I was on before, I was taking 33 pills a day for a chronic pain. And it was just because I didn't know any better. I had no idea. And I'm just like, okay, you're the doctor. You tell me what to do and I'll do it. And then I heard somebody say, like, you got to ask yourself, if you're taking all this medicine and you're not getting better year after year, then what are you doing? Yeah. I was kind of like, oh, okay. So I started to heal myself as well. It sounds like that's what you did. And I like to talk about it almost like that I was blessed enough that I died while I was still here. And now I'm a totally different person. And man, it's such a different life. But you said earlier about the, you have the pharmacy in your brain. You know Sadhguru?
Yes, yes.
I hear him talk about this, how we have all the, we can do it ourselves. We don't need that medicine. And God or universe, source, whatever, has provided it in nature. And if you just look around, eggs, bananas, fruits, you know, it's all there. And if you can't, I tell my kids, if you can't pronounce it or it starts with an X on the food label, it's probably not good for you.
Yeah, that's an excellent piece of advice. I completely agree. We are bombarded with a lot of chemicals. Some we don't even understand. They are in our shampoos. They are in our skincare. They are in our food. That's the biggest one, right? Food, what we consume, and it's really everywhere in the inputs that we take from the environment. And in Ayurveda, they call it they're very big. Ayurveda is very big on all the inputs that we are giving to ourselves. And so like once I talked a bit about like not watching too many crime movies and somebody laughed when I said that, but there is a reason because like we don't want to overly consume. And I say it with like love and there's no judgment here, but like I say it with love that we don't want to keep our brains activated with things that are just like going to elevate imaginary fear, are going to potentially bring us into like a fight or a flight kind of a mood. So there's that like caution to be exercised because everything around us is literally an input to our senses. And so we have the power to choose that.
Yeah, and that's such a good point. Sometimes we don't even think like we're just watching it and our music or lyrics. And it's like, we get to decide what to watch and you could just skip past it. And I'm with you 100%. And there's so much in the environment. Food is the biggest one, but there's other things, right? Just toxins in the air, lights, cell phone, radiation, all these things are happening and we get to kind of choose. And that's the thing. The biggest thing for me was the power, the knowledge that you can choose. You don't have to just go down that same road. I think I saw something you said that fitness is not wellness. Can you talk about that? Because I love it. It's a very intriguing thought.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that came from a point of just my observing the culture that we live in. And there is a, like, it's great if people are able to go to the gym. And it's great that if you're able to, like, tone up your muscles and do your dumbbells and everything, all the machinery that's available. But that is a fine-tuning of the body. And a lot of people are actually trying to fine-tune and chisel their bodies without paying attention to wellness. And wellness is something we can't see, right? Like there are happy people who are who are just not chiseled or nowhere close to being chiseled, but they have peace of mind and they have a sense of calm. And when you talk to them, you feel good. And they have like little practices in place on a daily basis that they might have picked up from somewhere, or they just worked for them, but they have ways of continuously bringing their body back to balance. And they have a body awareness. They have an awareness of when things are going out of balance. And again, there's no judgment here, but like, to me, it feels like fitness alone and the excessive pressure on fitness, because see, fitness also connects with like self-image, with body image, and like how people want to look. And that's all lovely. Like, we all want to look great and we want to feel good, no harm. But when I work with people, I really want to also bring in this like component about like, if you feel good from the inside and if you are truly well and all your organs are working really well and your elimination systems are working, I will not like talk about like, there is like, you're sleeping well. Sleep is a big one. You're sleeping well. You're eating the things which are right for your body type. It really shifts the way you experience life. And then you can still chase fitness and you can still chase that chiseled body, but you're just energetically coming from a completely different place.
I love it. Yeah. A friend of mine last winter, so she wanted to go to Thailand and she wanted to lose 30 pounds, I think was the number. But I'm like, why do you want to lose 30 pounds? He's like, well, I want to feel good in my body. I'm like, well, then you don't want to lose 30 pounds. You want to feel good in your body. Big difference, right? So the weight doesn't matter. It's how you feel and acceptance and all these things. And toxic culture comes into it. Diet you see at the gym and all the powders. And now even you go into the stores and it's just everywhere. And it's like, it's hurting for, I think, the youngest people probably, right? Because that's what they're seeing. And again, like watching that horror movie, they're like, oh, I have to do this. And it's not healthy. So I love it. It was a great, I'd never seen it or thought about it. But when I saw that, I was like, wow, that's great. And so you emphasize the importance of nature and healing in nature and well-being. So can you explain maybe some of the parts of nature that help with that?
Absolutely. So the big piece, like Ayurveda is all about being one with nature. The whole belief system is that we are made up of the elements that already exist in nature. So we are made up of the five big elements, which are ether, air, fire, water, and earth. These are the five big elements. And then we have like three energy principles, which are vata, which is a windy or airy principle, pitta, which is fire, and a little bit of water too. I'll explain that a little more. And kapha. Kapha is made up of earth and water. And these three energy principles, they exist in the world. They exist on earth, but they also exist in our bodies. And so, like, depending on how within balance or out of balance these energies are within our body, we might experience well-being or lack of well-being. And so there is a constant process in Ayurveda to bring our body back to balance. Now, most of us are a little bit unbalanced at most of the time. Like, we might have a cold or we might be, like, overly exhausted. There's small imbalances, but then when there is an illness, it's really the body has gone way out of balance. And so prevention work is really so important, because when we are mindful and when we are watching our bodies on a day-to-day basis, we can actually, one, intervene earlier, whether it is externally, whether you need, a person actually needs to go to the doctor and the disease has spread to a point where they actually need like specific allopathic or some kind of a modern medicine intervention. But it can also be something like a little bit of change in diet or changes in the way we live our daily lives can very easily bring us back to balance. And so that awareness really helps in just like how far we can go into disease, or like we can intervene early and prevent any problems from occurring.
Yeah, and it's like tuning into your body, right? Like certain foods, I know for myself, and I never used to even realize it, but I'm like, certain foods are like superfoods for me, maybe not someone else. I'm sure everyone has their own, but different foods can make you feel really good and give you that extra. For me, like pineapple is one of those foods where it's just like, bam.
Do you mean it makes you feel good or no?
Oh, it's so good. Like, yeah,
That's
there's something about
interesting.
pineapple. It gives me extra energy. And yeah, before learning all these kind of things, I didn't even think about it. I just, hey, I like pineapple. But now it's like, oh, I actually feel an advance or just a little more power. I don't know. But it's about tuning into your body, right?
Yeah, we can certainly make observations about how certain foods make us feel, but in Ayurveda, we have a broad formula as well, which is helpful. So the Prakriti is the basic constitution of the body, and the three energy principles I discuss below, we all have those energy principles in the body. And sometimes they can be a little more, like somebody can be Vata predominant, or somebody can be Kapha predominant. And so like all of these Prakritis or basic body constitutions will have a certain foods which have maybe the opposite energies in them, because plants and fruits and vegetables, they all have like these five big elements in them. So we can use the opposite or sometimes similar, depending on the situation, foods that help the body come more to balance. And when we use herbs, we are actually doing something similar. We are using, like, herbs will lend their life force energy in ways that where the imbalance in the human body is, they can act to correct that. If a certain energy principle is in excess, then we can use a herb that actually brings it down. Or if there is a certain energy which is very low, then we can use a herb to bring it up, as examples of like how this works. So we can use all of like fruits, vegetables, all kinds of foods, and also herbs. And then there's external therapies like oils that we can use to bring more correction in the body.
Yeah, I love lavender. Do you, when you're saying that there everyone has the three and there's different balance, is that in that same person it will change, or like you might have one more predominant and someone else has a more predominant, or in the
Yeah,
same person?
so we all have the three energies in our body. All of us have those energy principles working in our body. But some people, that's what Prakriti or basic body constitution is, that some people have a little more of the airy and windy quality. And it can manifest, and Vata, it's called Vata. And Vata energy is actually like, it's like the air, and it's like the wind. It's a very creative energy. It's very flowing. And Vata predominant people are like very agile and flexible, and they have a certain flexibility in their body. While Kapha is made up of earth and water. So it has a little bit of heaviness. So when we see people who are very stocky, naturally stocky looking bodies, they might be Kapha predominant people. And so there's like diets and foods that we can match. And these energies are constantly going in and out as well. So it's like this is just the basic body constitution. It is not really a framework that can help us to always solve an illness or solve a problem with the individual. But it does help to know, because in balanced times of our, like when our health is doing fine, we can really use these principles to our advantage. The dietary guidelines. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I think that shows us a bit about it, but more towards mothers, right? You're dealing with expectant mothers. That's part of your programs.
Yes. So Ayurveda has a lot of emphasis on the fertility process, and there's a very special place in Ayurveda for fertility. Like the whole concept and idea of like creating new life is very, very special. And so there are four main factors that we look into when we are trying to conceive and like extend a family. And one is like the timing in the couple's life. So is how the woman's hormones working? How's she feeling in her life in general? Is it really the right time for her in every possible way? So physically, in terms of like her mental health, her physical health, her emotional well-being. We're looking at timing, not from like just, oh, I'm like 35 years old. And so it's not about the number, it's really about the condition of the body and the mind. And we're really paying a lot of emphasis to that to decide whether the timing is right for women. And we don't always like think in these ways, right? Like we think of timing in terms of age typically, but we don't think, or there are so many other factors people consider. For example, like when they have bought a house and when they have made certain progress in their professional goals, that factors into when they want to make a family. Like there's all kinds of these external factors, but it's really like end of the day, like when we go back to nature and we ask the question, what's the right timing? The right timing is the complete well-being, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, and the connection with the partner that decides the timing. And then the other factors are, it's about the health of the bija, the sperm. How healthy is the sperm? There is the factor of it's called the kshetra or the field. Now, the field is the entire body of the woman. So the field, we think of like gardens or agricultural fields, and we want them to be like healthy and rich, have the best quality soil. And so like they say that the woman literally has the seed in her hand, and the condition of her body is like the garden or the field, and we want it to be in the best possible condition so that the fertility process, the conception process. And when we think of it, like think of epigenetics, right? Like this is so relatable with modern science and everything else that we are learning, because literally like the prakriti or the basic constitution we talked about earlier is genetic material from the mother and the father and the lineage, but directly from the mom and the dad. And so like the mom really has, the parents really have influence over what genetic material they are creating in that fertility process. So we have a lot of influence over the quality of and the health and the longevity of the babies and the offsprings. And that's like, just to have that knowledge is a very empowering piece, because like when I went through my health crisis, one of the things that came up for me was I was in my early 30s. So first, it was completely unexpected. But second, like I had to rearrange my life completely. And I felt like, okay, like now, am I still going to be able to be a mom? Am I still able to, like, even if I have a child, am I going to be able to actually care for a child? But it's not like, I think like every woman who's ever thinking about extending their family, these are questions to ask themselves. And this is, there is like a certain space to be in for fertility to really be optimal and to be the best possible experience for them. And the other piece is like, there's a lot of work that we can do in preconception that we can't act, a lot of corrective work, I would say, on the body that can be done preconception that can sometimes not be done once the woman is already pregnant. So preconception work is like really gold. Like if you can do even a little bit of it, like I have a 3-month program, but like if somebody can do even getting 1 month of preconception work, it makes a huge difference in like this epigenetic scenario.
Right. So epigenetics, the environment controls the genes. So if you're going into a pregnancy and you're scared and you're worried, that's going to get passed down a little bit. And then you're saying too, maybe you can clean out your body. You can get a little stronger. I know this for menopause is like, if you can, I don't want to say like get in the gym, but feel healthy in your body. And like, then the thoughts are a part of it too. That's going to make it easier going through menopause. So same thing here. Is if you go prehand, do you know Gabor Mate, Gaber Mate? I don't know. He talks about trauma all the time. He's an old Hungarian guy. Sure. Okay. So he's like the number one leader about trauma, but he talks about the epigenetics, how he was born, his parents were in a concentration camp. So even though he wasn't born yet, his mom having to see that and the environment coming in and breathing on her and just that trauma that she, it gets carried through to the womb. And so this is part of the epigenetics. And I think both of our stories would show like really good proof of epigenetics, right? I don't know totally about yours, but mine, I was in this environment, everything burnt. I changed the environment and everything changed. And so the genes are there. You're born with the genes. You can't really do much about that. What you can do is upregulate and downregulate, turn on and off certain ones.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just understanding these concepts and like really just tuning into them gives us a lot of power, because we are not accustomed to thinking about health and well-being in this particular way. Like, we don't always think that we can upregulate and downregulate, right? So it's just like perfect what you just said. We can do it. Yeah. And when we go back to this, like, Ayurveda and traditional wisdom, it's 5,000 years old and it's there. It's documented. And now when we are learning about, like, as a researcher, I'm always looking for pieces of, like, what pieces of modern science are really speaking to Ayurveda. And I'm always trying to, like, bring them together. It's because it's so fascinating. Like, there's so many interesting pieces, like all the talk on hormones, right? Like, hormones are also a big part of, like, what I do with my, like, for my pregnancy prep and fertility boosting. And Ayurveda talks about, like, hormones in such interesting ways that, the idea of, like, the inner pharmacy of the body is pretty much there. And, like, everything that you just said about, like, upregulating and downregulating, like, it's in our hands. And one way that we can do with this very easily is, like, just taking care of our routines. Like, an Ayurveda routine is a big thing. And it's the simplest thing. But just the way we live today, it's gone out of the window, because we're not so much in control of our routines. That's the reality. We have jobs where people are giving us our routines, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, we have to be, like, really smart about how we have a routine while, like, still being able to honor everything else that's going around us. And yeah, like, those are the kinds of things that we really, that's very practical, you know? Like, that's what I bump into when I work with people. Like, I have a real job. I have to fly out every 2 weeks. And my time changes. My body changes completely.
Yeah. It's shocking to me. Like, you said that at the beginning of that exchange, that the yogi, you didn't say it, but yogis, like, they knew this stuff 5,000 years ago. And now science is starting to be like, yeah, this is what they're right. Like, how did they know all this? That they have so much wisdom, right? So,
yeah, it's very fascinating. And I think bench science, like modern science, is just sort of recreating the web in many ways. Like, we are just studying to speak to what was said before and just, like, find places. That's one thing. The other thing I've constantly felt is that it's also important to bring ancient pieces of work like Ayurveda to the present context. And it is not always easy, because there's a huge environment around us. There's television, there's all kinds of concepts and ideas about who we should be. And then in the middle of that, there's me, like, telling somebody, oh, please use coconut oil or sesame oil, because this is really going to do wonders for how you're currently feeling. And it sounds really awkward to them. Like, I don't even like sesame oil. It's so thick. But if you are a Vata Prakriti, or if you have, like, a certain dryness, a lot of dryness internally, externally, it's actually going to be very, very helpful. So just find the right quality and experience it, is what I would say, you know? Just be open to the experience of it. Like, if you just continue to dislike it, you can always drop it. It's not a big deal. But I know that it, like, feels a little bit awkward to talk about, like, to just open up and be comfortable with these out of the norm ways of living and being.
Right. And you talked about mental health earlier. And so I wonder, like, you've given us lots of different strategies and ideas, but is there particular for, like, mental health? Because, again, that will affect the epigenetics of what's happening and the birth process. So do you, like, look at that beforehand and just, like, help the person understand?
Yes, absolutely. So when it comes to women's work, mental health is definitely very important, and being in good balance, being in the right relationship, not being in a toxic relationship, but also just being not sleep deprived, not depressed, not in high anxiety. And of course, we know, like, mental health operates on a very broad spectrum. So if there is, like, mild depression or sadness or anxiety, these are easier to resolve within a certain time period. But intervention is required. But then there is, like, more chronic conditions. for which I personally believe Ayurveda is amazing, and integrative mental health care is what I stand for, what I would do for myself or anybody else. And so that's the other piece of my work as well. But really, I just I'm able to blend everything that I learned about, like mental health and social work, and the talk therapies that we use, and then also look at the whole body and think about like what kind of external changes will actually help the person, which includes everything. Like diet really helps mental health, changing food helps mental health. Now, exercise also helps mental health, but the right type of exercise helps mental health. So there's in my work, I'm able to blend like what would be right for that person with other external inputs as well. And talk therapy is amazing. It works, and we want people to be moved with our words and with action, and with giving them something to do to like fulfill the next important steps in their life. Like that's very important, but it's also important to create slow but steady personal empowerment so that the person has an environment that doesn't constantly keep putting them back into the depressive state or the anxiety. And that environment can be given by like something very holistic and natural, and foods and herbs, and and that's what I do.
I love it. I think, what about thoughts? Like thoughts have to have a huge role in all of this.
Absolutely. Thoughts do, which is why we start with talk therapy. We listen and we try to understand what the thoughts of this person are and how realistic they are. And usually when we are experiencing depression, especially anxiety, creates a different kind of thought process. It has certain urgency to it. It's a very vata energy in Ayurveda. But depression could have like vata energy. It could be like very anxiety induced. Like there could be anxiety within depression, but the depression could also be like very kapha type. It could be very heavy, and the person doesn't want to get out of bed and do anything. They don't care anymore about the job or the clothes they wear, or there is like a huge disconnection. So these have similar patterns, but they are different experiences.
Yeah, I think.
And so.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry. I didn't mean to.
Yeah. So thoughts, that's working with thoughts is like helping people be aware of the truth of their thoughts. That's part of any intervention. Like if I'm having fears about something, is that an imaginary fear or a realistic fear? And the relationships is a big piece, right? Like most people I've met, like mental health has some kind of entanglement with some relationship or the other. It's very common in my experience. And so like helping people just see themselves stand in their own glory, like separate from anybody who is intervening with their body, with their mind. And let me find some other way to put this, but so we really get very attached to the identities we have, right? And these identities can be professional. It is about who I am as a professional. It can be about my relationships, like am I a good mother? Am I a good father? Am I a good professional? Am I a good hockey player? Do I have the potential to be the president of the United States? Like there's all kinds of like these ideas that we impose on ourselves. And so that's socialization. But if we can let all of these drop, including the relationships that we have, and just view ourselves as human beings in that moment of like very deep self-compassion, a lot of healing then becomes possible. Because we can really then, we can just really see we're just a person, you know? And just a person. And I have a lot in common with everybody else who's giving me this trouble or I'm feeling troubled by. Right?
Yeah.
And
Oh, I was going to say there's a guy in Florida, Michael Singer, and he talks about it, how we just attach to our thoughts and like you have to separate and sit back. And you started this entire conversation by talking almost about interconnectedness. You didn't say it, but you were saying how we're all connected to nature and it's all interconnected. And that's like a Buddhist philosophy. And then the other end of that is detachment. And so when we're talking about thoughts, you got to detach and the thoughts come up, but we don't have to identify with them, and it's just a thought, right?
Yeah. And so for people who go through like chronic mental health issues, there is this like constant awareness process that can slowly be built. And so there's just like thought is talk therapies and like having conversations and being aware of our thoughts is great. It's foundational in the way I think about it. But there's like also just creating that environment with other things that we are going to do anyway. Like food is an input that we are going to get every day, right? So that's how I also look at it. Like context is so important. And to whatever extent we can, it's so important to correct our context because that's one thing we do have power over.
Yeah, and the quicker you can do it, right? Like you have this thought and then it spirals to something else and then all of a sudden you're the worst person in the world, but it's like you just went down the rabbit hole where if you stop it right away, reframe it. What's a Viktor Frankl quote? It's on my watch, actually. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space, we have the power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. And it's just like, if you can get in the gap, Wayne Dyer talks, he calls it the gap. But if you can get in the gap, it stops the entire spiral.
Yes, yes. And Viktor Frankl, if you think of it, like his work was literally written during World War II in the Nazi camp. So imagine that just being able to understand this little gap and the importance of this gap in that particular environment, it was done. It was done in that environment. So like just how powerful our mind is. And even under the most pressing circumstances, there is so much change that we can create. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I facilitate chronic pain and mental health, anxiety, depression groups. And so where I'm at is there's one guy who just, I can't get him around the corner. I'm always like, tell me something you're grateful for. I'm not grateful for anything. I'm like, how about the bed you're in, the iPhone you're looking at right now, you know? But I can't get him. And it's that spiral. And I don't know. Like, I'm just going to keep plugging away and trying every week, but I don't know what to do about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because the person is visiting you in one capacity or the other, but still they have this resistance to change or this resistance to break through. So they're just by visiting you, they're holding up the constant promise to you that I am going to change. I'm going to get better because they could disappear. But so I think there is hope there. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I never looked at it like that. That's perfect. If he keeps showing up, that means like he wants to. So
you have work to do. Yes.
I feel like a broken record. Just like, anyway. So maybe do you ever do group coaching? Because I don't know. I think, like, I don't know if it would work for that specifically, but I find it's a powerful modality.
I haven't done group coaching just because of the, recently, I haven't. In the past, I have facilitated mindfulness groups and done it with like specific exercises and some storytelling. And that's also always been helpful. But what I found was that for mindfulness, there is no one thing that can keep us together for the rest of our lives. And that's why my model is really integrative, because from my own experience, I also felt that there's just no one thing. If I did, like, breath work is so powerful, it's helpful. Food is helpful. But all of this, first, it has to be customized and personalized. So that really means it has to be right for that person. It has to be correct. And it has to be able to make the influence that one is wanting to have. Because like we discussed earlier, there are many happy people who are eating a lot of crappy food, but they have no mental health problems. They're going to be just fine. And they're probably going to die of no major illness because they have something going on for them, right? So we really want to find the correct pieces for the individual, which are good for the moment, but which are also sustainable somewhat. And even when I talk about sustainability, like the shift in decades in our over a period of lifetime, it does require for us to play with different tools. So what works in the 20s and then suddenly life is different in our 30s and then it's very different in our 50s and our 60s. And so there has to be like all of that taken into account.
Yeah, for sure. I'm thinking about the PERMA model in positive psychology, where it's positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning, and achievement. And if you can have all of them, great. But even if you can only have two or three, you kind of stop yourself from going too low because you can bounce to the other one. And so that's in addition to everything you're saying. Definitely want to respect your time. I think before I ask my final question, I always let the guests take it wherever they want. So like if you have something to sell it, a message of hope or inspiration, some events you're doing, wherever you want.
Absolutely. So I would love for people who listen to this podcast to just connect with me and to stay connected and just, you know, DM me on my Instagram, which is Viva by Shri. And you can look up my website, which is also vivabyshri.gohia.live. And just DM me if you would like to have a conversation or if you would like to learn more. I also have like some free things on my website that you could download and just like enter my world. So I would, yeah, that's what it is. I'd just love to be connected with people more.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll put all those links in the show notes. And usually my final question is, where can people reach you? But maybe, do you have any superfoods that help you out the way pineapple helps me out?
Yeah, so I'm actually very fond of Brie cheese, but Brie cheese is not something, it's very dairy, right? So like I'm not, as a kapha person, I'm not really supposed to be like consuming a lot of it. But I found that like I can have like certain types of cheeses depending on like not the very heavy and thick ones. So yeah, Brie cheese really helps me. And avocado is definitely a superfood. So it has a lot of goodness. It's always very, what do I say? It's
brain butter.
Brain butter. Great description. Yeah, brain butter. And yeah. And also be able to like enjoy the foods that we have, right? Like,
yeah, like the Brie cheese. What's Helen Keller said? Life's short. Eat the dessert first. Well, yeah, Dr. Shri, I'm so grateful. This was an amazing conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.